The Dean Crowe sessions continue with one of the country's greatest singer-songwriters. Playwright Frances Harney is back to the stage and back on the case. And hullabaloo is on the way with the Fanzini brothers bringing the madness to County Offaly. You're welcome to Encore, Midlands 103's dedicated arts show with the best of what's happening in, around and about culture and the arts in Laois, Offaly, Westmeath and sometimes a little bit beyond, every Thursday night between 7 and 8 o'clock. Encore at midlands103.com is the email address. I'd love to hear from you at any stage. Tonight on the programme, Frances Harney is back to business with community theatre in County Laois. She has pulled the community crew back together again for a theatrical extravaganza. The play is called The Case and it is full of intrigue, drama, comedy and, of course, community. Gerry Rayburn will bring us up to speed on a play that should have taken to the stage 2 years ago. Hullabaloo is on the way with scores of events to take place for children across Offaly over the midterm break. Guido Fanzini joins me to chat about what makes great kids' theatre and how tough an audience they can be. And Ultan Conlon has performed with some of the most famous singers and songwriters, from Eddie Reader to Richard Hawley, from Brian Ferry to Mavis Staples. And he is in the Dean Crowe Theatre on Saturday night for the Dean Crowe Sessions. And he is with me indeed very shortly on the programme. And you're welcome back to Encore on Midlands 103. And still to come, it's time for the Fanzini brothers to get ready for Offaly's Hullabaloo Festival. And Frances Harney and company are on the case and on stage in Mount Mellick this weekend. Before the break, we heard two great tracks from Ultan Conlon, the Galway-born singer-songwriter. The second song, I have to admit, is one of my Desert Island discs. Really Gone, that you heard there, featured not just Ultan himself, but the incredible and the very, very much missed talent that was John Martin. And when I spoke to Ultan recently, he was telling me about that collaboration, about that song and how the collaboration happened.
Well, that was an amazing honour. I was in my mid-20s when that came about. And previous to that, as a teenager, I got into singer-songwriter, and John Martin would have been one to the four of them songwriters that I listened to regularly, and I was a big fan. So we ended up supporting John on a few gigs, and he liked that song as the short and tall of it and said he'd like to do something on it, and ended up singing on the track. So it was an amazing thing. It still is. It'll always be an amazing thing, Paris. It's great to have that out there, and thanks for playing it.
It's one of the most perfect songs I think it's possible to hear, isn't it? And with the combination of the vocal and the energy and the mood that you both bring to it, which is so very different, and the timbre of your voices as well.
Thank you. It wasn't written for something like that, but I suppose maybe that's testament to it being a good song in that sense, that it lent itself to having the vocals like that on it. I mean, I wrote the song when I was very young. I was only in my late teens, and I wrote the first verse and the chorus, and I actually put it away for a couple of years, and it was around when I was 22 or 3, I discovered that verse and chorus, and I finished off the song. So it kind of came in two halves, that song. And I'm glad I found it, because, it could have been one of them ones that slipped through the net,
And how, in the first place, did a guy from Ahaskra end up supporting somebody like John Martin and going on to support the likes of Mavis Staples and so many other performers over the years?
I don't know. Well, I guess I've been kind of, I've been working away at my music for a very long time. Since I was a young teenager, I started writing songs and I started recording, and I played a lot of pub gigs for many years. That was my income. But I kept the songwriting thing going, and I guess just over the years I was lucky that people heard it and liked it, and I ended up getting some radio plays, and that led on to meeting people and gigs. And it's a very tricky thing to map out how it all comes about, You'd often get people asking you to give them advice starting out, and it's very difficult to, there's no real roadmap, I think all you can do is keep writing and keep working at it and keep chipping away, and try to have patience, because sometimes it can be a long game. And a lot, for everything like that that works out with the John Martin thing, there must be another million things that don't, So it's, as everyone knows, it's a tough business. But I'm lucky that I guess I'm still doing it. And of course, I do a couple of other things as well to make an income, because it's just, it's a very hard business to, like, I work as a full-time musician, thankfully.
Yeah, which is a, which is the dream in some ways, isn't it, to be in that position?
A dream and a nightmare.
Yeah, but it's almost, and wait, you know that better than I do, it's nearly 20 years since the Alton Conlon EP came out. It is,
yes,
an extraordinary career that has taken you all over the world.
I guess so, yeah, and I don't think about that often, but when you say it to me that way, yeah, it is almost 20 years since I recorded my first. Actually, I had one EP before that one, a live one, when I was 22. So, in fact, it is exactly 20 years since I kind of started putting out music. And to date, I've put out 4 albums, and I have a new one that I made this summer in America, and that'll be out next year. So I guess the way to look at the career is, yeah, I get to work with some great people. I get to play some amazing shows, and thankfully, I get some nice messages about my songs, and like yourself, giving Really Gone a compliment like that. It's wonderful to be able to do it as a living, and you know, and still be here doing it. That is cool.
Tell me about what it is that makes a song that an audience turns out to a gig for, that makes them get up off the couch and put on their going out clothes and turn up at a gig. What are those songs? What makes those songs?
I don't know. I mean, I guess different people, different songs, you know. You could have a pop song and that'll get somebody off the couch. They want to go out dancing and have a good time. I suppose more the stuff I do, especially when I'm doing solo acoustic gigs, I guess something like Really Gone works because it's quite honest, and it's about loss, and, you know, unfortunately everybody can relate to that. And I don't know, I think when you show your vulnerabilities in a song, or there's honesty in a song, people can kind of relate to that, in the sense that they kind of can go, oh my God, that's kind of how I feel, or that's what I was thinking, but I couldn't really vocalize it. Or so I think when you shock people in that sense with a song, sometimes like Really Gone is kind of in the jugular. And then that tends to, I notice, that tends to have a big impact on an audience.
And then there are songs like that, like, you know, the Measure, which is one of those kind of, it's a sing it as you're going around the house kind of a song, which is a completely different kind of energy, yeah, and has such a much more, you know, kind of a big band sound about it compared to something like Really Gone, doesn't it?
Yeah, and funny, like, I actually heard The Measure on the radio today when I was walking. I had my headphones on, and it was unusual to hear it in that context, listening to other songs, because I'm quite close to it. But when I have distance from it, which I do, I wrote it a good few years ago, and I haven't played it in a while. I haven't done any gigs in a little while. I kind of listened to that song today and went, wow, that's a fun song. And, you know, at the end of the day, Claire, like, I love writing songs, and I love writing from the human experience. And I love a fun pop song. I love good songs that are well structured and have a strong chorus. Mm. And I like songs that are catchy and can be an earwig. And so I'll always test myself just to see, oh, I'll have a go at writing something like this maybe, or I'd like to try my arm at writing something like this, because for me, I love the craft of songwriting, and it's nice to kind of test yourself as well, and push yourself a little, and not just stick to the one tone, you know. So I think every time I do something now, I'm kind of looking for, I don't really want to repeat myself, you know.
which would be very easy. It would be very easy, yes, to fall back into the familiar. But I imagine when you get to perform with, or to share a stage with and perform with artists as diverse as Mavis Staples that I mentioned earlier on, Brian Ferry, mm, and then Shelby Lynn, which is a much more country mood. And there's all kinds, yes, of everything in there. And they're obviously all seeing something different in your sound that connects with them, despite their very different, their own very different individual styles.
Yeah, I guess a lot of the artists I play with, I mean, Mary Cochran and Eddie Reader, I've done a lot with Eddie Reader and Mary. You know, they're all song people. At the end of the day, like, these people are all just
to songs. And do you know, Mary sang one of my songs as a duet with me, and Eddie joined me on stage for The Measure, and apparently she's going to record that. So the greatest compliment I can get, really, is just, like, people like them liking my songs, because, like, look at the songs that they've played over the years. They've chosen some amazing songs to cover and made them their own. So when people like that have me along, and it must be something to do with my songs, that gives me great, that gives me such a boost, you know.
You are doing a lot of touring, but you're coming to Athlone on the weekend. Tell us about that gig and, you know, performing fairly close to home.
Yeah, well, I'm originally from Loughrea, but I moved to Ahasker a few years ago. I bought a house over here. So Athlone has become my kind of nearest big town I go to, you know, to have a coffee or do a bit of shopping and hang out and stuff. And I love Athlone. And I kind of always felt like, oh, geez, why aren't there more gigs happening there? Like, you know, regional gigs. There doesn't seem to be a lot happening there. And then the people at the Dean Crow called me about this gig and asked me would I like to play it. And I jumped at the chance to play in Athlone because, for one, it's just down the road, which is great. I don't have to stay away or anything. But the other thing is I do love the town, and it'll be lovely to see the people come out there and let them know, because some of them might see me around the town and I'd like to let them know I play music.
Alton Conlon there, and you can hear him play all of his great songs on Saturday night at the Dean Crow Theatre in Athlone. After the break here, we'll be going all the way to the Community Arts Centre in Mount Melick, where Frances Harney and her Ballyfin, Rosanalis, Clunaslee, Mount Melick and more cast are gearing up for a performance that was cut short by the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. Stay with us for that and more on Encore on Midlands 103. You're welcome back to the programme. Encore at midlands103.com is the email address if you'd like to get in touch with the show, the arts programme that comes to you every single Thursday night, and we keep up with what is happening in the arts in Laois, in Offaly and in Westmeath. This is a very busy weekend in the Midlands. Tomorrow and on Saturday there is MOM at the Community Centre in Port Harlington. And you might remember that we had Michael Keegan Dolan on the show recently to tell us all about it. It sounds like it will be absolutely spectacular. But a different kind of spectacle comes to the stage at Mount Melick's Community Arts Centre also on Friday and Saturday, and that is courtesy of Frances Harney, the playwright, the actor, the drama coach. She has been writing plays for the local community for the last number of years, and the most recent is The Case. But it is also the latest, 2 years late, as cast member Jerry Rayburn has been telling me.
We have been rehearsing in February, March of 2020, and about 2 weeks before we were due to go on stage, the Case was closed due to COVID. And over the summer, we had contact with Frances, and she was hoping to get it up and running again. So it was reopened there the first Wednesday and Thursday nights of September, and we have been rehearsing it ever since then. And everything is going well for us. Rehearsals are going well.
It's lovely to hear you using that legal jargon, because you do play a solicitor, a lawyer,
yes,
in The Case. Tell me about your character, who has the most wonderful Hollywood name of Cyan Steele.
Right, the character I play in is the lawyer to Sir Hugh Clooman, who is involved with Clooman Estate. And my role is that he has called all his family and friends to his home. He wants to make some important announcement concerning them all. And I play the role of giving him advice as to what he should do. The play itself, The Case, is set in 1984 Ireland. Could be anywhere in Ireland. And at the time in Ireland, in the 80s, there was an economic recession. And obviously, Sir Hugh Clooman wants to make some important announcement to his family, his friends, and everybody who works on his estate.
Now, that sounds to me like the opening of a Miss Marple mystery, that Sir Hugh is getting ready to make a large announcement, and all the people who have a vested interest in what he might say are drawn in together. That must put you as his solicitor in a very challenging position.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And I try to give him advice on what his options are concerning himself and all the people concerned.
So tell us a little bit about his family and those people who are hanging on, could we say, who were hoping for crumbs from the rich man's table.
Well, when he has all his guests and everything gathered together, something sinister happens. His body is discovered lifeless at the bottom of his cellar stairs. And that leads to, in turn, and then a wide-scale investigation as to what happens. And some of the world's leading detectives have been brought in to investigate this case.
Very good. It sounds incredibly dramatic.
Yes. I suppose you would describe the play as one of those classics of whodunit type of thing.
Mm. Which are always hugely entertaining.
Yes. Well, this play is extremely entertaining. There's a great variety of comedy in it. There's a great mix of intrigue. There's a great mix of suspicion. There's a great mix of pointing fingers as to who done it.
Of course, because everybody has their own stories, their own secrets and their own agendas.
Yes. And I suppose throughout the play, everybody's concerned about their own interests and what they can get out of it.
Of course.
And that leads to the intrigue, it leads to the suspicion, it leads to the pointing of the finger.
And this play, as you say, has been in production for 2 years. Hollywood, eat your heart out. You've been getting ready. So I'm guessing that now that you've all come back after initially being ready to perform the play and then having 2 years to think about your characters and then coming back on stage, as you say, since the start of September to reacquaint yourself with those, it's lovely to come back as a community because this is community theatre, isn't it?
Well, this is very much a community-based production. It's a very much a community-based set of actors. Like, they're from Ballyfin, they're from Portlaoise, and the general local area. And the whole purpose of the play is, you know, that all funds raised for the play will be divided within the community of Ballyfin, between the Ballyfin GA and the Ballyfin Community Development Association. And at the interval then, there is a raffle, and the proceeds from the raffle will go to the Cushla Centre.
And that's a really important part of it, isn't
it? Yes. And like, it's a big production play. Like, I mean, there are 34 members of a cast.
And this is what Frances Harney does, isn't it? She crooks her finger and the locals come to the rehearsals. This is your very first time. Is it the first time that Frances has crooked the finger and invited you to be part of the show?
No, for one or two other of her plays, she did ask me. She asked me would I become involved in the thing. And I thought about it and I said yes. And then when it came to the rehearsal things, I had too many commitments in school and all school involved. And I just said to Frances, in fairness, I wouldn't be able to do it. I'd be missing a lot of rehearsals. And I was thinking of all the other people involved.
Mm.
And like when we got back to rehearsals here in September, it was great to get back again. Most of the cast, the original cast, are there. A couple of replacements have come in. But they're all brilliant. They're all working well together. And it's a great sense of fun. Like for myself, like my first experience of theatre or being on a stage or anything else like that, and I'm getting great sport out of it.
I wanted to ask you about that because you're a teacher and in ways that, you know, if you're a teacher, you're performing for a living. But this is a very different kind of performance, isn't it?
Oh, totally different. Because, you know, like you're a teacher, you're performing in the classroom, you know your audience and everything else like that. while going on stage, you don't know what sort of a reaction you're going to get from an audience. And you could have one reaction on the first night of the production, and on the second night of the production, you could have a totally different reaction.
And what's been the highlight of your theatrical experience so far?
Well, as I say, this is my first adventure. I think the highlight of it, I'd say, Claire, would be is the sheer camaraderie that's involved with all the members of the cast. And there's great support for each other. We work extremely well together. We're having a tremendous amount of fun out of it. And I think everybody's enjoying it.
Well, you're on stage at the end of October. Sell it to us. Why should people get ready to come out to the Community Arts Centre in Mount Mellick to catch up with The Case?
The reason people should come out to have a look at The Case is the sheer entertainment value that they're going to get out of it. There's, as I said already, there's a great amount of comedy in it. You have a sense of intrigue. So there's the sense of mystery. There's a sense of where the audience might, well, who actually did this, right? And in a way, you're encouraging the audience to figure out, well, did he do it? Did they do it? Did I do it? Or whatever. And I said, it's tremendous night's value for money, like €10 in to see a wonderful production.
And you can catch The Case, which is guaranteed to entertain, tomorrow night and Saturday night at Mount Mellick's Community Arts Centre. And after the break here on Encore, we'll be catching up with Hullabaloo, Offaly's Arts Festival for kids. You're listening to Encore on Midlands 103. Encore at midlands103.com, the email address if you would like to get in touch. Well, festival season has not ended in the Midlands, not by a long shot. Next month, the Leash Leaves Festival of Music and Literature sees Claire Keegan as the chief guest for workshops, for talk, for an interview with the writer and critic Edel Coffey. I'll also be in conversation with Ronan Heshen at the library in Portlaoise. And next week here on Encore, the book doctor, Becky Long, will be chatting with me about reluctant readers and the joy of reading for kids. And she'll be in Port Arlington as part of the Leaves Festival and welcoming you and your small ones and even the bigger ones as well to come along and have a chat about what books she might recommend for your reading pleasure. But speaking of kids, the Hullabaloo Festival of Arts for Kids in Offaly sees events happening this midterm break in Birr, in Clara, in Tullamore and in Edenderry. And anyone who lives with or works with young people will tell you that they are tough to entertain. And someone who knows a lot about keeping a young audience happy is Guido Fanzini, a man of many talents. And when I was speaking to him recently, I asked, who exactly is Guido Fanzini and what does he do?
Well, generally, I try to go crazy as much as possible for people. But basically, I do a circus comedy show. A lot of people would describe it as stand-up comedy with props. And I've been doing it for the last 20 years as part of the Fanzini Brothers. So I started off basically as an amateur juggler, and I found that people had an interest in seeing people perform, and I seemed to naturally, I was the joker in my class at school, as you might imagine, and that just kind of naturally seemed to come out when I was put in front of a crowd of people. So I just went with it and did a little bit of training and kind of learned a lot myself on my own, and that's brought me to where I am today.
Tell me about why juggling to start off with, though. What was the attraction with that?
I don't know. It just there is kind of a meditative quality almost to juggling. There's kind of a rhythm to it, and any skill that I've tried, really, it's become for me anyway very addictive. So you just start picking things up over the years. So I went from juggling maybe to doing little bits of fire. Then I started learning how to walk on stilts maybe. Then I might progress from that onto unicycling. And I'm basically at the moment I'm kind of specialising in whips and stuff like that. So it's probably a long way into a lot. But that's the thing is the great thing about it is really the only limit is your imagination and the time that you're willing to put into the practice, because unfortunately it's one of those things that you can't just pick up. Very few people can pick up and just be brilliant at stuff, and you really have to put in a lot of time. So you kind of, it's the 10,000 things. How do you get good at something? Do it 10,000 times.
Yeah. Tell me about the thunderous entertainment haberdashery. What is that when it's at home?
that's just about, tis about a 40-minute show that I do that's specifically aimed at the younger audience. And it's all faux danger. The basic premise of the show is that I'm an incredibly dangerous person, but the organiser has asked me to calm it down because of insurance concerns. So I start out the show doing very boring things, and pretty soon myself and the audience both get sick of that. And then it's just a matter of cranking up the danger after that. But it's basically to make people have a laugh and just forget themselves and forget their worries for 40 minutes to an hour and just kind of have a bit of crack.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it, to have a job where people come in to see you and they leave feeling an awful lot better than they did when they went in. You know, there's so many jobs where that doesn't happen. I'm thinking of dentists, maybe, and
at least the dentists have access to helium, so they can laugh for the day if they want to. Yeah, but because my mother keeps telling me to this day, when are you going to get a proper job? And I'm 50 years of age at this stage, and I've been doing this for the last 30 years. So I think it's really about, and for the performer as well. It's very rewarding, kind of getting that reaction out of people and having people coming up to you after the show and saying that was great, I really enjoyed it. That is really the most rewarding part of it, because you're never going to get rich.
No, probably not ever going to get rich. How do you create a show like this then? What's the starting point for you, and you know, what are you drawing on to create that 40 minute moment in time for people?
So for what I do, a lot of it is based on the script would nearly all be improvised. There is no set script. So what I would do is I would just pick out a number of tricks or pieces that I would like to do, and then just put them together in a kind of a sequence that builds towards a finale. And a lot of the comedy and stuff like that comes from the basic human interactions that you have with people in the audience, and seeing how you play with that, and random things might happen, people might walk through where you're walking, you know. It's how you cope with that stuff and how you kind of turn it around and turn it into something funny, really. But we've done scripted shows as well, and that's just basically a process of sitting back, again, basically starting with the skills and saying, what kind of a narrative can we build around this? So I have one show where I send my partner that I occasionally work with, Ronaldo, off to with all the money to come up with a new show. And he spends all of the money on a giant cannon, and he's wasted all our money, so we don't have a show, so we have to improvise a show on the spot. But it all builds up to having Ronaldo shot out of the cannon at the end of it. And that was just, I think one of us just said, wouldn't it be great if we could shoot one of us out of a cannon? And we just said, can we really do that?
You watched too much Muppets and Gonzo when you were small, didn't you?
Yeah, actually, when I grew up in the 70s, I think it was one of my real formative influences. We were lucky enough with RTE, with the two channels, we were lucky enough to have a lot of Harold Lloyd, Buster Keaton, and everybody's really a fan of Laurel and Hardy, and to this day, their stuff, and it's that kind of very basic, simple humour that just transcends all barriers.
Yeah, that kind of slapped the make way for Harold Lloyd. Those were the days.
Yeah.
but thinking about what your mum said, when are you ever going to get a real job? The kind of real jobs that are out there are not generally ones that rely on you going in to only react to what happens in front of you. You know, improv is not easy.
And it's not most people's
natural place to be.
Yeah, that always amazes me, because it's the type of thing, I guess, when it comes naturally to you. I know friends who are terrified standing up in front of two people and having to talk. But it's just, that seems to be my comfort zone for whatever. And once you have that level of comfort, then you can kind of branch off from that and see what happens. But generally, particularly when you're walking on the street, you never know what's going to happen. So myself and Ronaldo have done shows in the pouring rain. We've done shows where dogs have run through, and it's just that element of chaos that kind of you have to be ready for.
Yeah, you have to be happy to embrace it. They say that we should never work with, you know,
kids and animals. But how is that? Obviously, you get the animals involved in the performance if they happen to turn up and walk across in front of you. But what are kids like as an audience? I've heard guests on the program before say that they're quite tough, they're quite demanding, they know what they like, and they let you know if they don't like it.
Oh yeah, yeah. And you can always tell that if you're watching, because I'd spend a lot of time watching other shows, and I'd always have a half an eye on the audience to see when the kids are getting restless or when people start drifting away. And then you know as yourself as a performer, if people start drifting away, you need to work on a certain section of the show and kind of bring it up to kind of keep those people. But kids, the problem with kids is their attention span. So we would never do a show that goes longer than an hour, that would be, because you just lose them anyway. And that, and just keeping it interesting for them, keeping something happening, and always having something to draw their attention, and just keeping it simple, keeping it on a level, just a basic human level that they can understand.
And when they don't understand it, when they don't like it, what can happen with an audience of kids? I'm curious.
Mostly it's just boredom, and they'll start talking to each other, they'll start getting up and start walking around. But that doesn't really happen that
no,
much.
Sure.
We did have an incident, all right, in Farmley House a couple of years ago, and there's this one particular show where myself and Ronaldo play off each other, that I'm the bad guy and he's the innocent fool. And I wasn't used to kind of being the figure of derision in the show, and I think I was laying it on a bit too thick, and at one stage a bottle flew past my head and then a couple of more bottles flew past my head, and I nearly had to deal with a stage invasion, because the kids really, they were so into it, they were like, I'm going to get this guy who's being mean to Ronaldo.
So they, when they get into it, they're completely, totally, utterly bought in.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's the great. And even the adults might sit there, and they just inevitably get drawn into it, because again, it's the, a lot of times we find it's the adults who really enjoy our show. We've had adults come up to us saying, "God, I haven't laughed as much in years." And you get the inevitable obvious comparisons then to cartoons and Laurel and Hardy, because they remember that stuff as well.
Yeah.
It just connects.
Well, we are a week or so out from Hullabaloo. So Guido Fanzini, invite the young people of Offaly to come along to your Hullabaloo gigs. The floor is yours.
Yes, gentlemen. Hullabaloo is happening on Thursday, the 3rd of November. And that is in Tullamore Presbyterian Church at 3 p.m. And then following that, the same day, I'm on at 7 p.m. in Clara Family Resource Centre. And then on Friday, the 4th of November, I'm doing a 2 p.m. show in Edenderry. So bring it along. There'll be Hullabaloo, there'll be Re-Raw, and there'll be Rulabula.
Guido Fanzini there. And there are many events happening during the Hullabaloo Festival. Most of them are free, but most of them do have to be booked. You'll find out about all of them on hullabaloofestival.ie. And they run from November the 2nd to November the 5th. And that is Wednesday next until Saturday. And that is it from me for tonight. Next week, I'll be chatting to book doctors, to microphotographers, and a psychotherapist who is performing his own one-man play with music. After the news, the great Joe Cooney will bring you the best of Irish and American country music, so do stay tuned with us here on Midlands 103. I'll be back in this seat again next Thursday at 7. Until then, take care of yourself. Good night.